We'll go ahead with our regular city council meeting. Start with a call to order, and again, a moment of silence followed by the Pledge of Allegiance. Okay, again, Mr. Crawford, if you could call the roll, please.
Certainly, we have Eric Davidson.
Here.
Karina Higgins. Mike Hill.
Here.
Sonia Hurt.
Here.
Richard May.
Present.
And Mary Lou Stewart.
Here.
Ryan Lopez requested to be excused.
Could I have a motion to excuse Ryan Lopez, please? Mike Hill, seconder.
Second.
Okay. All those in favor say aye.
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 Any opposed? Okay, that's passed 6-0. We're going to start our meeting with a presentation from the Whatcom County Health and Community Services. Erica Lautenbach, please. Thank you very much for coming.
Good evening, Council. This feels very formal standing in front of a podium, but I hope we can have a more casual conversation, and I welcome you to ask questions anytime along the way. I'm also going to pass out our first annual report. And I'll go over some of the details of that. But it's been a long time since I've seen many of you in person. And many of you I have never seen in person or on the screen. So I wanted to make sure that we provided you with an opportunity to learn about what we're up to as your health agency, geographic Whatcom County-wide, and also be able to just engage on any of the things that you have questions about or you'd like us to be thinking about in terms of priorities. So I'll go ahead and just jump right in. I'll start with, thanks, whoever's driving this, very intuitive, thank you. So I will just start with a little overview of our department. We've changed and grown a lot since 2019, and not just because of COVID. There are a variety of additional services and grants that we've received that have resulted in, this is really loud. I'm wondering if I can turn it down. Maybe not. I'll just stand a little further away. A tip for me?
Yeah, he's doing it.
Oh, okay, great. Thank you. I think, yeah, that feels a little better. Thanks. So we have six different divisions in our department. Community and organizational development includes our data and epidemiology team, our assessment and evaluation, as well as our other cross-cutting functions like communication, emergency preparedness, equity, policy, and workforce development. Community health and human services is a very broad, we have several very broad divisions within our department. That division includes nurse family partnership, it includes food systems work, housing and homelessness, developmental disabilities, veterans, substance use prevention, children with special health care needs, children and early learning, and it is also the team that's responsible for administering the Healthy Children's Fund, which I'll talk about a little bit more in future slides. Our Communicable Disease Division, which you're probably familiar with, but it's immunizations, it's tuberculosis. Our public health doctor and nurses treat every latent and active TB case in the county. It is our syringe services program, just general communicable disease, and working with high-risk settings like congregate facilities, assisted living in nursing homes and schools. And it's also sexual health, our sexually transmitted infection prevention and treatment team. Environmental health, you're probably fairly familiar with kind of the usual suspects in environmental health, including food safety, so all of our restaurant inspectors, school health and safety, living environment, on-site septic and drinking water programs, as well as solid waste and recycling programs. And we also do work around extreme weather response and mitigation. Our financial services team is really sort of what keeps things running. We have over 300 contracts between what comes in and what goes out. So it's a lot of money with lots of different requirements to track, making sure everyone gets paid, et cetera, et cetera. So they have a big role and also managing a lot of different funding sources within the county and outside of the county. And our response systems division is a new team. Just about 2 years ago, we brought this team on. They were with a contractor that there were some concerns about performance, and we brought that team on. And they include the ground level response and coordinated engagement. You probably have heard of GRACE. The lead team, which is law enforcement assisted diversion, alternative response team, which is new and I'll talk a little bit about, but it's an alternative to 911, and mental health court, a co-responder program, which pairs behavioral health specialists with our Whatcom County Sheriff deputies, and behavioral health contracts and coordination. And then our leadership and administration, which is myself. We have two co-health officers, Dr. Amy Harley and Dr. Greg Thompson, and it includes all of our customer service and vital records, permitting, and complaints. So if you are a visual person, here's another way of looking at our department that includes all of those divisions and functions. Okay, next slide, thanks. So just to give you a little idea of our budget, this is kind of a pretty broad roll-up of our funding sources. As you can see, that turquoise piece of pie is the one that I want because it's big, and that's the tax revenue. So that includes the Behavioral Health Fund, the Healthy Children's Fund. It includes developmental disabilities millage. It includes veterans millage. And document recording fees, as well as some housing funding that we receive. The second largest portion, and I actually broke down the state into two because I think it's worth noting. So state in red is through the Department of Health and other related contracts at the state level. And then as you can see, that lime green just below it is foundational public health services, and that's an effort by the legislature to ensure that every health department in the state has a core set of functions that can meet the needs of community. So it includes communicable disease, environmental health, data and infrastructure, business competencies, et cetera. And that is now, that particular line item is now a full 7% of our budget. In contrast, and I think it's really important to note, general fund, county general fund is only 6% of our budget. So 94% of our budget comes from funding sources outside of just the kind of general coffers. So we work really hard to receive grants and also to perform in a way that we can maintain those grants as well as get new grants for the innovative work that we do. So I'm going to zoom out a little bit, and then we'll zoom back in. Our strategic plan, which we launched in 2022, it started sort of officially in 2023. I'll go over some of the highlights, but this really, it was an opportunity for us to think, okay, we're moving out of sort of response crisis with COVID. What do we see as our ongoing core role in our community? And it's the five P's. So promoting health through policy and systems improvement, preventing disease and injury, providing accurate and reliable health communication and data that should go along with it, preparing for and responding to emergencies, and preserving a healthy environment where everyone can thrive. And we do that by partnering with our community. And when we talk about advancing equity, it's really making sure that the people who need the resources receive them in the right way at the right place. So that could be geographic equity, it could be income equity, it could be racial equity, et cetera. But really thinking about how do we use our limited resources in the way that they can be most effectively and efficiently delivered. So next slide. Our strategic priorities for this 5-year term are really in response to kind of rebuilding and re-engaging in support in broader areas other than communicable disease. So really thinking about community partnerships and engagement. We've grown an incredible amount as a department, like I mentioned. And so really, how do we make sure that our infrastructure is keeping up with these new positions, new roles, and new responsibilities? And then also thinking about workforce development, not just for ourselves, but we know that many of our service providers, including housing, behavioral health, homeless service providers, and others are really, and our school, a lot of our school personnel as well, are struggling. There's a lot of burnout, and we have shortages in those areas, which puts pressure on those that are still in those systems. So how do we use our resources to support the continuum of services, whether they're provided directly by our department or out in the community? If they can't perform, if our providers can't perform services to help people, then our system doesn't work well, and we're really thinking about the system as a whole. And then quality management. And this is really an effort to rebuild some of the trust and accountability and transparency with our community. There's a couple of initiatives that I'm going to talk about, but just thinking about how do we make sure that we use program data to show the effectiveness of programs, that we allow the community to have a good insight into what we're doing and how we're doing. I'm going to pause there. Any questions for me before I go on? Okay. Okay, few highlights from 2023. The first is, I mentioned that alternative response team, or ART. It is, we've received a grant from the state for sort of a pilot period that they've now extended for another 2 years because of the success of the program. This was, this is in partnership. So the co-responder program is outside of the city limits of Bellingham. The alternative response team is within the city limits of Bellingham. As a pilot, which we hope to grow. But just to share, so this is two behavioral health specialists that and an embedded dispatcher that take 911 calls that don't require a police response. So it could be someone is in the middle of winter walking around on the street without shoes and socks. It could be someone who's yelling in the street. It's often some of the behavioral health issues that we see among people that result in a crisis, either for a bystander or for themselves. And between July and December of 2023, sort of the start of that demonstration period, we were actually able to divert 830 calls from law enforcement, which means they were able to take the calls that were most appropriate for law enforcement to take, and we were able to relieve that workload of them and be able to provide a really humane and trauma-informed response to people that were in crisis. So I mentioned the co-responder program that's just getting started, and we're really looking forward to seeing the program results of that. We launched a street medicine program, which is a nurse practitioner and a nurse, along with some Medical Reserve Corps team members that support vulnerable and primarily street-based folks with services. So it reduces the burden on the hospital system, on healthcare. They treat wounds and injuries. They connect people to services, and they go to the permanent supportive housing facilities, the homeless shelter in Bellingham, and elsewhere, some of the encampments as well. To just provide those base level services so folks don't end up in the ER with really chronic and severe conditions. We saw that there was a growing reserve in our behavioral health fund, and we really wanted to tackle the issue and quickly of youth mental health in our community. And so last year we were able to re-engage with every school district in the county and an increased contracts amount for every school district to provide more social workers, behavioral health staff, counselors, and others to support students and teachers. And over a three-year period, we'll spend more than $3 million of that reserve to support school districts. That's on top of the existing contracts that they have with us for behavioral health. Last year, we put out over $6 million in ARPA funding for childcare, and that will create 277 new early learning spots. We also preserved 84 existing slots that were at risk of going away. And we provided 32 grants to local childcare providers for retention expansion of childcare. So it could be adding slots, it could be redoing certain areas of their building to support their operations, et cetera. And those grants were from $10,000 to $100,000 each. And I'll talk a little bit about what's happening with Healthy Children's Fund as well, but sort of the gopher strategies on capital funding were with the ARPA funds that we received. We started a MAC group, that multi-agency coordination group. I don't know if any of you participate in that group, but that's really an effort to look really holistically at the opioid and fentanyl crisis that we're facing and think about how we can solve some of the system challenges with our institutional partners. Some of it's going to take money, but some of it is also just communication, coordination, system improvement work, and we're really trying to hit on all those points. We also have been involved with the All Hands group around opioids, and we distributed almost 12,000 doses of Narcan to the community last year. So what's ahead? In our effort to be to provide more data and more timely data to our community, we are creating the Health Insights, which is going to be a set of over 200 metrics that will be updated as the data becomes available. This in the past has been really static. Our last community health assessment was in 2018, and it was a document like what you just received. Not really easy to update, and you know, making a lot of one-off requests from the community for new data as it came out. So this will be dynamic, live on our website, and as you can see, just in this one indicator, you can see there's going to be a trend button, a race and poverty by race and sex, poverty by age. Poverty by age trend, and notes about the data, where we got the data, when it will be updated, and how old the data is, et cetera. So that's coming, I think, next month, and I'll make sure that you all have a link to that. So if there's anything you want to dig in on, you can. So on the Healthy Children's Fund, year one was last year. We developed our implementation plan and really started working through the different strategies. There's 10 strategies in the Healthy Children's Fund. And in the next, we have two RFPs out, and in the next couple of months, we'll have a number of others. We're working on monetary subsidies for families. That's a really big and complicated project, and it's taking some time, but I think it will really provide some relief, both for families who struggle to pay for the cost of childcare, but also help stabilize the childcare facilities by having more regular revenue. We're working on auxiliary services like OT, PT, speech, and mental health in childcare settings, so those childcare providers can better meet the needs of the kids in the classroom. And that's about $1 million we're gonna put out in the next couple of months. We are working on professional development training for early learning and care providers. The number one thing they said is that they need more training, and they need that support network in order to not feel burned out and not leave the industry. So we want to be able to provide that to them, and we're working with higher ed to have a hub for professional development. We're also working on drop-in childcare, so not having to have a slot, but having more flexible options for families, especially for families that maybe have a foster care child and don't know sort of what the scenario is going to be from day to day, but really want to provide that service to the community. We're also working on small capital and childcare facility expansions, in addition to all that ARPA money, and planning grants for school districts so they can think about how they could potentially provide some auxiliary services as well. And then on the vulnerable children's front, we're working on recruitment of mental and behavioral health. We have a real shortage of behavioral health professionals that work with small children, and making sure that we have that bolstered, a peer-to-peer support group for families. We hear over and over again from families that they don't feel like they have a good network in order to work through problems, some of the challenges that they face. So that feels like an important one. We're expanding doula services for families, which are known to have good health outcomes for families who need them. More resources, and this one is out already, so resources for family who are experiencing housing stability. So just keeping those families with young kids housed in their home, stable in their housing situation. We're also going to put out an RFP for basic needs, including diapers and formula and transportation vouchers. All of these are really expensive for families. Diapers are incredibly expensive for a family that's struggling. And so that, just having that basic needs component. And then perinatal and maternal support programs within the hospital setting. About 2,000 babies are born every year, and almost all of them are born in Peace Health. So how do we make sure that that system is running well, and that when parents leave, they have resources and a way to get support after they bring home their child? So there's a number of different things we're doing on that are all coming soon. Couple more, and sorry, there's a lot going on. It's really hard for me to give you a really short presentation, but couple more things. We are excited about this project. It's the Way Station. We're partnering with Peace Health and Opportunity Council and Unity Care Northwest. It will be respite beds, so people who don't need to be in the hospital anymore but don't have a stable place to continue their recuperation can go here, and it's 16 beds, as well as hygiene services, so showers and laundry, and resources and connections to health, behavioral health, Medicaid-assisted treatment, and other services that people might need that come to the Way Station. And that is opening in September of this year.
And you're saying that is for people who don't need to continue to be in St. Joseph's. Is it going to be primarily a medical facility, or what is the...
About half of it is the medical side, and the other half is kind of the hygiene and support services. Okay. So 16 beds of respite... 16 beds. Yep. And then lastly, the county council has introduced a declaration of emergency around, or a request for the executive to declare an emergency around fentanyl. And we're working on some ways that we can support that work. We have a lot of things in the hopper, but we know that what we've been doing is not enough, and we need to find ways to fund more programs and services, and to take more concerted effort and action on this. So within a few days of the council making a decision on that declaration of emergency, we expect the executive will have a pretty robust plan of what we're going to do in the next 6 months. And last couple. Our environmental health team received a grant from the state to complete a climate vulnerability assessment, and this will not only sort of weigh in for the comprehensive plan, but it's also really focused on smoke and heat and who's most vulnerable. So that could be homebound seniors that don't have air conditioning, or it could be young families. It could be children with asthma, et cetera, right? So where are those areas that are most, geographic areas most vulnerable to smoke and heat? And then who are the people, and how do we make sure that we have targeted interventions so we can become more resilient when these things happen? Because we're seeing them every year. So how do we prepare in a better way? So that's coming out, I believe, in June. And lastly, we are working collaboratively with the executive staff and the sheriff and all the criminal justice agencies on implementing the jail ballot measure and all the related behavioral health programs, including a 23-hour crisis facility, a behavioral health care center at the jail, and expansion of diversion services and supports. So with that, I will stop talking, and I'd love to hear any questions you have.
Any questions for Erica, please?
will the declaration of emergency, if that goes through, will that release additional funding as well as the action plan that you were talking about?
Yes and no. The hope is by declaring an emergency, if the federal government does in suit, that we would be better positioned to access federal dollars. So that said, there are some dollars, for example, we're looking to tap into the Behavioral Health Fund reserves, maybe just for 1 year. We have opioid settlement funds that we can use for this purpose and really just kind of jump starting some of these efforts and taking away a little bit of the sort of hoops and bureaucracy that it takes to sometimes put out contracts. Sometimes it's 6 months from the time you write something up to the time it actually goes out to the community. So really thinking about how do we move the money more quickly, but still transparently. We obviously have to balance our budget like you do, so we can't just grab our reserves and go into the red, but I think there's ways we can be creative about what we do have.
So you're going to be doing this in conjunction with what Bellingham has done as a city?
Yeah. I think given the scope of our county services, it will be a more sort of comprehensive and robust plan, but definitely in partnership with what the city's doing.
One more question.
Sure.
Have you done any research into identifying what portion of the communities are most affected by the fentanyl? I'm curious how much has it infiltrated our high schools, things like that.
Yeah. I'll write this down. I know our staff have a really good handle on where we're seeing it and where some of our bigger concerns are. You might all know Joe Fuller and Rebecca Snearley, they work with our school, the Blaine School District and the Community Coalition there. So I can ask them what they're seeing in school districts and particularly in Blaine. So yeah, I'll follow up on that.
Well, thank you so much, Erica, for coming and giving your presentation and letting us see the scope of what your department does and also giving us an update of what you're focusing on right now, which is important.
Thanks so much for your time.
Thank you.
And know that you can always reach out to me if you have questions. Okay, thanks.
Thank you. Okay, we'll move on to the consent agenda then. Items listed below will be enacted by one motion. If separate discussion is desired on an item, that item may be removed from the consent agenda and placed on the regular agenda at the request of a council member. Approval of bills, $413,762.60. Approval of wire register, $443,978.32. Approval of payrolls, $739,164.03. Approval of February 24th, 2024 City Council minutes. Appointment of Blaine Chamber of Commerce representative on the Blaine Tourism Advisory Committee. And finally, a bid for 2024 Public Works vehicle purchase. May I have a motion to accept the consent agenda?
I so move.
Seconder, please. Bill, thank you. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Consent agenda is approved by 6-0. We'll move on to the council action items then. The first one, resolution 1943-24, a resolution fixing the time for a public hearing on the petition to vacate the east one half of Warren Avenue, abutting lot 16 through 23, inclusive block 16, plat of Mounts's first addition to Blaine. Washington, Mr. Gandhi, please.
Madam Mayor, so DJ and DJ has filed a petition to vacate the half east of Warren Avenue. The other half was already vacated in 1958 by resolution 1129. Yeah, I guess so. So this is just a time for setting up a hearing. We request for April 22nd to pass a resolution for the time.
Are there any questions for Mr. Gandhi, please? Any concerns? All right. Could I have a motion then to approve resolution 1943-24?
So moved.
Second.
Moved by Higgins, seconded by Eric. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Resolution 1943-24 is approved 6-0. Amendment to the contract for equipment purchase and installation for a hypochlorite generation system. Again, Mr. Gandhi.
Madam Mayor, this is a part of our well-filled projects that's already ongoing. So this is just an adjustment to the equipment that we have already awarded before. So basically, with the new regulations coming up, we were our initial was 0.2 mg per liter for our chlorine generation, use of chlorine generation, but with the new well, 5.1, taking more chlorine, and with DOH approval for 0.4 milligram per liter requirement for chlorine residual, we have to upsize our equipment size. So the difference in ordering the new equipment is what the amendment is requested for.
Are there any questions for Mr. Gandhi? Okay, recommendation, Public Works staff respectfully recommends that City Council accept the new quote and authorizes the city manager to execute a contract amendment with TMG Services, Inc. in the amount of $41,073.61 for hypochlorite equipment, hydrogen ventilation unit, hydrogen leak detection, chemical storage tank, brine tank, pump skid, and system. Installation. Could I have motion?
Too much hypochlorite.
Seconder.
So moved.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed?
Could we take a short recess?
Yeah, let's take a short break.
Any opposed? No.
Opposed?
Passed. 6-0. Okay. We'll go on to number three, project completion for G Street Sewer Improvement Project. Mr. Gandhi again.
Madam Mayor, this is just a request for council to accept the G Street project, which is already completed. We've already awarded the substantial completion. So we wanted the council to accept the final completion. The punch list has already been completed. The final payment has already been done. So there's no balance left. The drainage has been removed. So this gives us the, after council acceptance, this gives us the right to file the completion with other departments and closing out the project.
Just out of curiosity, from the start of this project to what it costs now, what was the difference between what we had initially been quoted and what it ended up being?
So the project was awarded to Strider for $4,254,210.56. The final construction cost was $5,551,681.92. The maths.
Our internal estimates were closer to $6 million, and we were surprised initially that the quote we got was down in the $4 million type of range. And then once the project got going, they discovered that our original the math that we had originally done was actually a lot closer to what it was really going to cost.
Isn't it correct? Within the engineer's estimate, lower than the engineer's estimate.
Couple other things, Madam Mayor.
Go ahead, please.
Two important items for the council to be aware of is, one, the location of our utilities was a significant issue during the project. We would indicate that a high voltage electric line was in place A, and they would find that it's in place B, and that added a lot of cost to the project. The second item was the geofoam issue. Our engineer thought that the geofoam would work, but when they went to compact the geofoam, they couldn't meet compaction requirements with that foam. So we had to backfill the, we had to widen the trench and then backfill with scoria rock instead of geofoam, which added to the cost. Those two items significantly drove up the price of the project.
Okay. Public Works staff respectfully requests that City Council accept the G Street Sewer Improvements Project as complete. Could I have a motion for that, please?
So moved.
Seconder? Mr. Davidson and Mr. Hill. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? The recommendation is approved 6-0. We're going on to commission, committee, and board reports. The first one is Civil Service Commission meeting.
So, I can take that one, Your Honor. We don't have an update at this point in time, but we anticipate we'll likely have one at the next City Council meeting or the one after.
Okay, thank you. Department reports. First of all, City Manager, Mr. Harmon, please.
Thank you, Mayor. I met with port staff last week and talked about a number of things, but I think two important items for the council to be aware of is that they have committed to rebuilding the shipyard location at our port. So they'll do some environmental cleanup probably in 25 and then rebuild that shipyard facility most likely in 26 or 27, which is a great thing for Blaine. Keep our waterfront a working waterfront and get businesses back down in the harbor. Second item is that they have also committed internally. They're starting to hear more and more requests from the public to reopen Marine Drive and get back out onto the port. And so the commissioners have asked Rob Fix to reach out to the city and talk about propose possibly giving that half of our road to them so they can move forward with the reconstruction effort. So Rob and I are going to be negotiating the terms of that exchange, and we'll bring it for you to for consideration, I like to believe, in the next 3 to 6 months, so they can move forward with that construction in 2026. So both good news, both items are good news for the city of Blaine. That's all, Mayor.
Mike, thank you.
Mike, oh, sorry. Mike, just for my own thought process, is that the kind of thing where we give them the road for a dollar, or does it have to be like per square footage, or how does that dollar amount usually work?
Madam Mayor.
Go ahead, please.
So it's a really good question. The port right now has preliminarily said, give us the road and $500,000 and we'll go fix it because that road is in disrepair. And so they want a city contribution to pay for what would be our responsibility if we were to repave half of that road. So that number is what Rob and I will talk about, what's fair, what makes sense, and bring back council an option for consideration.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Go ahead, Mr. Harmon.
So what the relationship would most likely look like, we give them the road, some sort of financial contribution toward the construction, and then we tie stipulations that they maintain public access to Marine Park, et cetera, so that we can still utilize our waterfront, and then we tie them to a construction time frame, and then they would go ahead and let the project and see that project to completion with our cash contribution. If the council wants to do that, we could say no.
It seems to me that quite a few years ago, we actually looked at putting the road in and we put it out to the public for their comment. And I think there were three options, as you remember, Alex. And I think the city would be looking at around $3 million to fix the road and get traffic going out and back from the port. So that was a while back.
Analysis may find that $500,000 is a good deal. To be determined.
That's why I was saying that, yeah. Okay, Community Development Services, Mr. Wenger, please.
Yes, Madam Mayor and City Council. CDS is pleased to announce that we have two new hires starting. So our first hire is our senior planner, Mike Beck, is a seasoned veteran coming from Skamania County, kind of down by Hood River. Mr. Beck has just got a tremendous amount of experience. A previous senior planner as well, and I think he'll just bring a great customer service kind of work attitude to the department. We're really lucky to have Mr. Beck, and he'll be starting March 18th, and then also starting soon is our new building official who will show up on his first day is on April 1st. His name is Clay Salzman. Clay had a brief stint in Wyoming, and then most of his experiences in California. So he'll be coming up here. Mr. Salzman has a tremendous amount of certifications and expertise in the building industry, and will be able to help CDS, improve our customer service and our ability to help people trying to get their projects built. So that's very exciting, and I'm just really happy to have those staff people join the team. So that'll be great. In other news, our planning commission will be meeting this Thursday evening at 6 o'clock. We're going to continue talking about downtown zoning. Our consultant transportation group, Dan McKinney and Chris Como, will be joining us and talking about the parking inventory study that we did downtown. And preliminary analysis shows that there is quite a bit of inventory down there compared to a lot of best practices in other cities. So I'm hoping to continue working with the Planning Commission and solidify a parking recommendation, and then we're going to kind of dive into the height discussion. So that'll be this Thursday. And then just one other update, if I could sneak it in. Wings Over Water is this weekend, and it looks like the weather is going to be changing just in time. I believe it's never rained on Wings Over Water.
It's missed it a little.
Okay. But, that's pretty good for March around here over the last 20 years. So the weather looks like it will be changing just in time. We're going to have a great event. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Okay. On to Public Works Department. Mr. Gandhi, please.
Madam Mayor, if you look on your desk, I have a pamphlet and card. So we are excited to announce that SRS has finally, taken over our, after our emergency hotline request. So basically, we have a number for all our citizens to call in case of any after our emergency for water, wastewater, or for electrical. This is a great deal for City of Blaine. Now it's safety for our employees, as well as the linemen who are working. Any updates you wanted to get during a power outage, you just call this number, and a live update agent will help you getting you all your questions that you have. And any other question, any suggestion you have, always there.
Mr. Harmon.
I would also add, on our website, citizens could find a tab called utility alerts. And so if you want to know when the power goes out or what our restoration efforts are or when you could expect it to be back on, you can sign up for a text message or an email or both on that, and you can receive real-time updates that will be fed by our live dispatchers to that site. So great way to communicate with citizens. We're very happy about this. Prior to this, we literally had our line crew answering calls about why the power was out. So they would stop fixing the system, answer the call, go back to fixing the system. Not safe for them, not good customer service for our customers. So this is quite a bit better. It's leaps and bounds better. Very excited for it. Madam Mayor?
Go ahead, please.
Great question. So we've asked Public Works staff, you'll start seeing these flyers. We're going to hang them up in businesses. We're going to be giving these cards out to people as they come in. We're going to be doing a separate postcard mailer that will go out advertising the service. We'll have it on our website. We'll put it on Facebook. We'll get it out as many ways as we possibly can.
Yeah, because that's what I would have been told before, is that would go out with all the utility bills.
Madam Mayor.
Go ahead, please.
We'll do all of it. We'll communicate this in every way we can to get the message out.
Mr. Gandhi.
I have another update for the council. It's a great news. So finally, our raise funds has been obligated starting March 5th, actually. So we can officially now spend the raise grant funds to get the project going on. So currently, we are in the process of putting out the RFP for a consultant. Right? So that's what the great.
I had a question. The in the city manager report, there's two things you didn't mention. One was a kind of a recap of the interviewing of the chiefs, And also, you have a member of staff there that has no nameplate, and there wasn't much mention there either. So could you handle those two items, possibly?
Mayor?
Go ahead, please.
We held interviews for Chief of Police on Friday. I did send an update to council via email on that, and we have a candidate. The candidate was recommended by the committee, or I should say the majority of the committee, for confidentiality reasons, because the testing is not complete. We won't release that name until we are all the way through the testing process. But we do have a candidate that we are interested in. That candidate has accepted a conditional offer of employment, and I don't see any issues with the testing processes we have remaining. Once we're through those, which will likely be next Tuesday, then we'll release that candidate's name to the public probably late next week. Carla Flaming is our interim finance director. You met Carla, I think, a council meeting or two ago as her role as interim finance director, and we'll get her a nameplate. Thank you.
Okay. On to calendars. There are some meetings coming up, so if you're on any committees, just have a look, make sure you understand them. Any council unfinished business? Go ahead. Oh, that was going to be on new business, but that's fine. Then we have written public comments. Again, it's included on the city's website, and it gives you the email address to send public comment. So then we're moving on to council new business and dialogue.
Yes, Madam Mayor. After hearing about the shortcomings at the food bank, and hearing a passion plea from Mike Hill one morning, I gave a lot of thought to this, and we couldn't actually come up with a concrete idea at that meeting at that time. But since then, I would like to propose that the city put on a community-wide fund drive and had the idea that we might be able to get a local business owner to allow us to have our local mural artist paint a graphic on the side of one of the buildings indicating a thermometer. And at your suggestion, I thought instead of just doing the old thermometer with the red line that keeps going up, we have a waterfall and leaping salmon. And every time we reach a new point, we get another salmon. So it would kind of tie in with the area. And the goal would be to surpass the $50,000. And hopefully we might have some community members that put out challenges to meet or maybe double whatever we generate.
Excellent. Any comments on this from anyone?
Mike, your mic.
They're first in line. I think people at the food bank, you know, whether they got there bad or good or whatever, they need help. And I just look at it as we're a big family here, and some of our family needs help,
yeah.
You know? And so I'm all for helping that food bank in any way I can.
I think if we do it as a community project, we will alert the community that the need is there, and they will hopefully respond.
We've kind of talked about maybe like a fishing derby or something like that, you know, where you get 50 guys, put $1,000 in each, and have a big fishing derby out here, and maybe put the scale up, make it a big, big wow, you know. And if you're saying it's all going to the food bank, I think you may even get more, you know. So it's just ideas. You know, if anybody's got ideas, let us know.
Carla, could you do you happen to know if there's any money in our budget that we could give to the food bank now, or have we already committed what we've got? Or Mike, excuse me, Mr. Harmon.
Mr. Harmon.
Madam Mayor, the short answer is yes. We've got money that we can give to the food bank. State law allows us to give to the poor and infirmed. We have already, used ARPA funds. The ARPA funds are gone. So any money that we would give to the food bank would be out of the general fund, and they're dollars that wouldn't go to something else, right? Either paying our police officers or building parks or doing those types of things. So the answer is yes, we can give money. It's just there are trade-offs when we do those types of things.
We don't have any reserve that we can pull out of It would have to be a tit for tat where we take it from Joe and give it to the food bank.
Madam Mayor.
Go ahead.
No, we have reserves. We have reserves that we could take and spend. They're just dollars that we don't have for something else.
But we can still meet like the payroll and all the absolutes that we have to pay.
Go ahead, Mr. Herman.
We'll make payroll.
So I'd like to make the motion that the city start this fundraising drive, and we can have additional fundraisers, Okay, I revise my motion.
I don't know if it requires does this require a motion of council?
To start a fundraising drive?
Sure. Madam Mayor. Well, we're sort of in some different waters here. If you're directing staff to do that, we can do that, right? We can take staff off of building permits and public works projects and other things and do that work. Just know that's the outcome, right? If you're asking for a city-backed fundraiser, we'd have to explore what that looks like. I'm not quite certain what we're asking for. A community fundraiser wouldn't need the blessing of the council. It could be started by a philanthropic group. It could be started by CAP. It could be started by a number of places. So it would just depend on what you're looking for here.
In my motion, I ask that the city support the community fundraising drive.
No.
So is that like a resolution?
Yeah, that would be a resolution, wouldn't it? Okay. Asking for a resolution.
I think we can have that as a resolution, can we, Mr. Crawford? Okay, is there, you're making the motion, and is there a seconder then? Okay, all those in favor?
Aye.
I do have some questions, though. I mean, when you say a resolution to support it, what are you asking of the city employees?
Just for the city's blessing, what I envision is having our local Margaret Owens assist us.
Who's that?
She's
an artist.
Overall walls?
I think mural. She's a mural.
Oh, okay. Okay.
To help us, and a local business owner to provide us a temporary use of their wall. After we're done, we can paint it black again or whatever color it started out.
A resolution requires neither a budget nor staff. It just says the city council is in favor of and gives the overall blessing and theme of.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't envision needing anything. Maybe a big ladder once in a while, but that's about it.
Okay, all those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay. The resolution is passed 6-0. We'll see what happens. Okay, is there any other further new business or dialogue? If not, meeting is adjourned at 7:01.